I'd like to call the June 2nd public safety meeting to order. If we could have Scott lead us in the pledge.
Of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, a nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to start off with just thanking everyone for being here this morning. If we could have approval of the minutes from May 5th and May 19th.
Motion, Potter.
Second, Tobia.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any corrections or changes? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries. We have Craig from probation.
Good morning.
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 So I have one item that made the agenda and a second that I'm hoping to be indulged with that didn't come in time. So first up, we have I'm asking for an authorization to contract with Apex Polygraph Services. We did a request for quotation through the purchasing department. The only response was from Apex. Apex is a local vendor from Corning. It's owned by Eric Hurd. Retired our regional state police investigator who did polygraphs in his line of business as an investigator and does that work part-time for the sheriff's department. So I'm asking for your authorization to contract with Apex.
Is the price comparative to what it was in the last contract?
It is the same price, and it is our friends and family discount. It is less than he charges any other probation department. He has contracts now with a number of regional departments, and that's a more favorable quote than any of those departments pay.
I'll move it.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Carries. And yes, you can go ahead with your second.
Thank you. So what I have would have had on the agenda request here would be the renewal of our contracts with Catalysts. We have two different contracts with this agency. They provide the annual maintenance and servicing of our case management electronic system. We have a second contract with them for web hosting. So they actually host all of our data in their web. So we're at a normal point of renewing those two contracts, but because they were entered with Catalysts at two different dates that are about 6 weeks apart, Catalysts and I developed an order form amendment to align the dates between those two contracts so that not just my department, but finance and other folks who have to touch this stuff on a yearly basis. Rather than doing it twice a year, we're going to do it once a year. So that amendment was vetted by the county attorney's office. Really what it does is it creates a brief window from July 12th to August 21st for one of the contracts to have a small window so it aligns with the other one. I'm sorry, I'm probably making this sound more complicated than it really is.
Is the contract cost going up, or
it's a 5% increase, which has been standard to recent years. And
join
again,
the meeting.
In my conversations with other probation directors statewide, that is the rule of thumb. The Catalysts, we're stuck with Catalysts. They have the state contract, so we don't really have a choice in this matter. But they have had a routine 5% increase across the state for other departments.
I'll move it.
All right, we have a motion.
I'll second.
We have a second. Are there any other questions?
This is just for the 6 week amendment. This isn't extending the contract after, or it's both.
Correct. Well, I'm asking about this amendment to align the two contracts, but I'm also asking to renew both contracts. They're both still renewable. So they're coming up.
Both. This would accomplish both and go through August or July of next year.
Correct. Yep. Through the end of August of 26.
And budgeted.
I'm fine with it.
Is your motion still good, Scott?
Yep.
Is your second still good? Mr. Toby?
Yes. Sorry.
All right. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Carries. Thank you, Craig.
Okay, thank you.
All right. We have Tim.
Good morning.
Morning.
A couple items for you this morning. First is a donation of equipment from St. James. I'll let Brandon talk about that.
Good morning.
Morning.
St. James is donating all of their EMS training equipment
In essence, they are getting out of the core sponsorship of hosting EMS classes, which we are picking up. So they're giving us an in-kind donation. I looked at fair market value for all the equipment that they are donating, and we had a total of $9,543.43. And I have a copy if needed.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Okay, the second item on the agenda, the Hickman Tower lease. Unfortunately, I'm waiting for some pricing back from the contractor on that. It's kind of hung up with their attorney right now. I was hoping to have that before committee. So I'm going to pull that item and hopefully I'll have it for next month. Item number three is awarding the stretcher bid.
Tim, so, is that something that is an emergency? So we should do it before the big meeting or can that wait till next month?
I think it'll be able to wait for next month.
Okay. Thanks, Tim.
So item number three is the award of the stretcher bid. We did a bid for new stretchers for the Hammond Sport Ambulance, and I'll let Brandon cover that as well.
So we looked at a couple different vendors. There's really only two players in the stretcher market. And we went with Aferno, who's been around for a long time. Total bid for two stretchers, $63,600.
Did you say $63,000?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was hoping
this is the cheaper of the two, by the way.
Yeah.
Almost.
This is what they run. These are power stretchers. They are able to lift 700 pounds to an upward position without any issues at all. This includes the charging, wheel locks, so all the accessories you would need to make this work. So again, $63,600.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it for discussion.
We have a motion and a second. I have one question. What is the life expectancy of a stretcher like that?
Good question. You can expect probably a good decade out of them with good maintenance. The batteries, I will admit, the batteries on these Fernos are a little better than their competitors. Their competitor uses more of a DeWalt battery you'd use in your drill, which we found has the life on them has not been great. These guys use their own proprietary battery, which the gentleman that sold it to us, a good week out of a battery versus a couple days out of a battery.
And this company's been around for a long time?
They have. Yeah, okay. These guys have been around for decades.
So to get their batteries if we need them.
Yeah, we use these in the coroner's van. This is the other. This is also the brand that we use on the Woodhull ambulance. So they're a well-respected company. I think you're getting a good decade out of them.
All right, Fred, you had a question? You got answered?
Yeah.
All right. We go ahead, Scott.
The Hammond Sport ambulances didn't have stretchers.
They do, but they're a Ferno 35, which are easily 25 years old.
And manual.
And they're a manual stretcher.
Okay.
These are automatic. They're going to allow us to be able to hopefully save from a workers' comp claim of a back injury. Right. That's our goal.
Yeah. And we're paying for these how?
From the capital project?
Capital project.
Yeah, we have $250,000, I believe, in that capital project.
Okay.
That was my question.
Okay. All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any other questions? If not, go ahead, Hilda.
We could use them for training. They could be kept as a backup. There's not a lot. They're dated and old, but they still work. We're currently borrowing two stretchers to kind of meet the power stretcher need. Those stretchers are kind of in reserve. We could use them as an absolute reserve. We could always use them for training too.
Always auction them.
And we could auction them if need be. So.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
I also have one other item for you. So recently we had a situation where, we had a wreck on the interstate. DOT was out with a vehicle, and they were waiting for the tow to arrive. The tow was the vendor that was requested by the owner was over an hour and a half away. It was getting dark. They wanted to get the vehicle off the highway, so they made a request for 911 to send next available tow. But unfortunately, in our policy right now, it does not allow for DOT supervisor to make that request It's only law enforcement or fire. So what we need to do is amend the policies so that we add DOT supervisor to that list to allow them to be able to request a next available tow to remove a, excuse me, remove a vehicle that may be causing a hazard on highway.
Yeah, I'd recommend if the committee is okay with it to add county, town, village, city to that as well. So it's the it'd be the transportation supervisors of municipalities, just so that there's no confusion for dispatchers. This was the time that first time something like this has come up, but the dispatcher and the supervisor, you know, they follow the policy and it doesn't state. So if they have the ability, I think that'd be helpful, along with obviously primarily fire law enforcement.
So I don't know that much about this, Tim, but if you had a DOT supervisor there and a state trooper, is there going to be any conflict between the two of them, or
they should be talking? So we use the incident command system, and we typically tell folks you need to be talking to each other before you make a request so that, you know, they know who's coming or who's made the request. You know, we run into this sometimes with fire and law enforcement. Law enforcement will request, you know, it'll sound like a bad accident. They need to get the traffic moving. So they'll request next available tow before they get on the scene. Then fire will get on the scene and they'll request a specific tow based upon the need of the incident. So then we get into some conflicts with, we called this vendor who was next available. They called a specific vendor because they need a specific piece of equipment. Now we've got a conflict between the two. So that's where we run into problems. So we always encourage these folks on the scene to be able to communicate with each other.
Tim, just for clarification, so basically you requested an amendment for the DOT supervisor to request towing under certain conditions.
That's correct.
Okay. And how's that worked yet?
And then Scott or Jack wants to add to that, not just the DOT for the state, it'll be the county, the or a town supervisor or town highway superintendent.
Town or village. Mm-hmm. City.
And how do we proceed on that? How do we make the amendment? Do you just make it? Do we?
Yeah, that we have. So this goes back a long ways. But this committee, I mean, technically, we probably could make the amendment without your approval because it's an internal operational policy. But because anything regarding towing policy has always come to this committee, we want to, you know, make sure that you folks all know and agree.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions? If not, do we have a motion to amend the policy?
I'll move it.
I'll second.
If we can get a report down the road, find out if it's working well that way.
Yeah, we'll definitely let you know. Again, this, you know, we've been doing it under this policy for almost a decade, and I think this is the first time this nuanced situation came up, but we'll definitely keep you posted.
Yeah, because I'm 100% in favor of it to get them off the road quicker. Yes. It's just to make sure that there's not that conflict of somebody that thinks they have power from a township. But yeah, the state troop, you know, that's the only conflict I can see. But if that becomes a conflict, then we'll have to relook at it.
I have one question. So if the vehicle that needs to be towed also need to be repossessed, do they change and call someone that repos instead?
No, they send it to B&W and then I go there and pick it up.
Oh, okay.
I don't pick up anything out on the road. All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
That's all I have. Any questions?
One question on the EMS training. Where is that done or where will we be doing? Is it civil defense or Hammondsport? Or?
We can do that pretty much anywhere. We've been partnering with Bath Ambulance and doing it with Bath Ambulance. They have a nice facility at their garage that we've been partnering with. We're also talking with St. James about possibly continuing to use some space over there to be able to still offer some training in the Hornell area. And then we've recently ran a class in Campbell at the new Campbell Fire Station. So we move it around so that it's a better availability for the volunteers that are out there.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay. Thank you.
Morning.
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 First item is to accept a donation, $1,000. From Herbert and Irene Smith for the canine.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Oh, we have a question.
Sheriff, I probably asked this before because I'm interested in the canines we have in the county. How many canines do we have?
Currently, we have 5.
And what are they trained in?
So we have Jack, who is accelerant detection, arson. We have Mac, who is nitrite, which is a bomb dog. And we have 2 patrol tracking narcotics. And then we have 1 that is a bloodhound specifically for tracking no bite.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Toby, I'll tell you too, and maybe we could even do this again sometime this summer if the fairgrounds and the sheriff's department will let us. But my first 2 years on here, we actually went over to the fairgrounds and they put some drugs in a certain spot and the canines weren't there, you know, because if they set them, then who knows, they might have known where they were. And then the deputies that had the canines, they came to the fairgrounds and we got to sit on like the bleachers and found they put like drugs in an excavator bucket or something like that. And it was pretty neat to watch how, you know, one dog would go and just tear it. Like he'd go barking and be crazy. The other one, you know, if like it was a bomb or something, just goes and lays down like it wants you to rub its belly, yeah. You know, so that whoever knows that they didn't find it. It was pretty neat to watch. Yeah.
And when I was assistant principal up at West High School years ago, we brought them in every month. And same thing, we'd empty the classroom, keep the backpacks in the classroom, mm-hmm. bring the dogs in, bring the trooper in. And the trooper would always go in first and hide it. Mm-hmm. And boy, that dog always found it, yeah. Always. You still go in the schools, right?
We do actually with our training group. So we'll take 6 or 8 canines at a time when we go into a school so that we
How can much cover. Can you do, Sheriff? I mean, what can you do? We used to go to the classrooms. I'd walk in, tell the kids, leave everything as is, step out in the hallway. They'd mm-hmm. go out in the hallway. We'd go in with the dogs.
We do that. We also do the lockers in the hallway.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can search if they hit on a bag in the classroom, you have the right to search.
You have the right to search.
Okay. School.
School administration has the right to search.
Enough. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Yep. Is that one done?
Yep.
Okay. Next one is donating a stop DWI simulator. In 2018 with a grant, we bought a driving simulator that was supposed to teach kids what it was like to drive intoxicated. It never worked well for us. And since then, the monitors don't work and we're storing it without using it. We found another county that wants to take it and try to resurrect it. So we'd like to donate it. I think it was Rensselaer. Think
so it'd be declaring it surplus and authorizing the donation transfer.
I'll move it.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to declare it surplus and donate it to the other county. Any other questions? Go ahead, Hilton.
So we're gonna buy another one.
Not like that one. Not like that one. It never worked well. Yeah, so we'll look. We're always looking. Yep.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Thanks, Sheriff.
Can we do Jack now or?
Yep. Okay? Yep.
All right. So speaking of canines, Mr. Tobia, canine Jack, the handler, is now the chief of police in Bath. Okay. And so he is still on the arson investigation team. What our plan is to donate Jack, the canine, to the village of Bath. They're good with receiving it. And that way the canine stays with the handler. Otherwise, we would have to retrain a new handler or send it back to the state. Those are our 2 choices.
Would he still be trained for arson?
Yes.
The accelerant. So yes. That stays
there. And, okay. And available for you.
Yeah.
So what we'd be seeking is an intermunicipal agreement. It should be pretty short and pretty easy. To transfer it, and then also the village would accept it and commit that Chief Lewis would still be part of the fire investigation team and use the canine.
And that was my only thing that I had mentioned to Jack also, is that in that municipal agreement, we want to make sure that you know, dog can still go out of the village of Bath, you know, to Camp Bell or Woodhall or Canastillo or something like
that. Yeah, that's big.
Have they signed that yet? Or okay,
I'll move it.
All right, we have a motion.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Now we have four canines. One other thing I wanted to bring to your attention, Mr. Chair.
Somebody's going to read those minutes, Sheriff, and think it's a typo in the beginning. When we got five at the end of the meeting, we got four. What happened?
Could be. Since the work stoppage with DOCS, they stopped taking state-ready inmates. A state-ready inmate is anyone who's been sentenced to over a year, and typically they stay with us less than 10 days after sentencing, and then they go to the state. Since the work stoppage, they haven't been receiving state-ready inmates. And now they're taking 100 a week, but there's about 2,500 state-ready inmates statewide. Currently, we are housing 25 state-ready inmates and have been for some time, along with 7 parole violators. So our actual daily count right now is 167 inmates, which puts us about 30 to 32 over what we normally are. I just wanted to bring that to the committee's attention because that equals 90 meals a day that we're paying for, plus medically assisted treatment for those that are substance use disorder qualified. So
we don't get money for that.
We submitted a bill for reimbursement, but we don't know if we're going to get it or how long by law they're supposed to, but it's $100 a day, which if somebody's got a medical issue, it doesn't even scratch the surface.
Go ahead, Joe.
Sheriff, what's the average number that you house at the jail?
Tiff, since I'm say over the last 2 years, around 130, 120 to 130.
And you're at 167?
Yeah, we're at 167 this morning.
Prior to bail reform, we were 180.
180 to 200. Yeah, as high as 210.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So I just wanted the committee to know that it's going to affect costs at the end of the year.
I just wanted on the record, Sheriff, that the service that you guys did out at the jail that Friday evening was great. You know,
appreciate that.
You guys did a great job. All the different speakers did a good job. That was very nice.
Thank you. I appreciate everybody being there.
Are you not fully staffed at the jail?
We are not. The governor changed direction and has started accepting back correction officers that they had previously fired. So we hired 12 and we've already had 5 return back to the state system. So no, we're not. We're still working on it though. But they also had another 500 resign after everybody went back. So we're optimistic as always. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Go ahead, Chris.
Good morning. I'm pinch hitting for Nate and Jen. They're away at conference. So first item on the agenda is to reclassify one vacant senior typist position in the district attorney's office, CSEA main unit grade F, to paralegal assistant, CSEA main unit grade J. After reviewing the duties of the paralegal assistant, it best describes the duties of that position. And Brooks is here to answer any questions as well.
Any questions?
I'll move it.
We have a motion. Do we have
second?
We have a motion and a second. In favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
And Brooks has one item of discussion that he'd like to have as well.
Yeah, go ahead and do the other one right now.
Yep. Actually, there are two real quick things. But the first thing is just sort of putting you on notice. As you know, we're having a really hard time finding attorneys right now. Bruce Rosecrans, who's been my senior assistant, who's handled lion's share of our discovery work, has given me his retirement or his resignation. He retires in early August, and I've had nobody has had any interest in that full-time spot. So in an effort to continue our discovery process, I have found somebody who's interested in a part-time job, and I do have a part-time opening, but not coming on until the end of August or beginning of September. But I need to fill all the extra time that Bruce is doing. So we're trying something a little creative. As you know, we added a part-time investigator to help facilitate discovery last year. It's been extremely, Joe Kelly. And it's been very, very successful. He has shown what an investigator can do, someone who's trained in reviewing reports and streamlining the process for our ADAs. So what we have, I met with Jacqueline, Nate, and with Chris, and we've talked about it. And what we are going to do, we have the funding in our budget right now with unfilled spots, is to hire 3 part-time investigators, assign them to discovery, and they will be doing the pre-screening of discovery. They'll be going through the files. After the paralegals bring the information in, traditionally it then goes to the attorneys, who then watch all the video, go through the entire redaction process, and then send it out. We're putting these folks in the middle. They will do a lot of the review stuff for us. They'll be watching, it'll be their time watching the video. They'll be identifying locations for redaction for the attorneys. They will be picking up areas that need to be addressed in a case and additional evidence we need to get into the office. A lot of the stuff our attorneys are doing, they can do up front to speed the attorney process. 3 of these folks come out to be, I think, about $120,000 a year. We're paying Bruce more than that plus benefits right now. It's also, it'll be a 6-month experiment. They're part-time temporary folks. If it works, we'll go forward and come back and look at making it permanent. If it doesn't, we'll abandon ship and keep trying to find more lawyers. We will keep trying to find lawyers to fill positions, but for right now, I think it's a way we can streamline our process. And you know, the cost of a part-time investigator is dramatically less than the cost of a part-time attorney or even a paralegal, because of the fact that they get no benefits. So
that's what I was going to say. Yeah. These 3 temps don't get any benefits.
They get no benefits, and they will not get benefits. So that's what makes them. And all of them are station commanders, investigators, senior investigators, folks who have reviewed files and body cam for a living for a bunch of years. So they're all very familiar with the process at various departments that we're looking at. That's the kind of people we're going to be bringing into the office. So I think we're trying to be creative in the time we have no attorneys, and also try to maximize the taxpayer dollar. I think this can do that. So I don't think we need to, according to Jack, we don't need to vote it.
No, we don't.
Because we have the funds for it. I just wanted to put you on notice. We're going to be trying it. So if you see more investigators wandering around in our office, or you see we have some, that's what they are there for. They are not, investigator was the best title for them, because we're looking for law enforcement folks, and we have those titles, and we can hire into those spots. But they're not going to be out investigating per se, but they will be helping our discovery unit move forward. So, one other very quick point. I think it's one that I know Sean's aware of. There has been a change in the clerk's office, the court clerk's office policy. Used to be, it's a filing process. We used to file all of our legal documents with a court clerk's office, and that took care of it for us. At the end of the case, the court clerk would file all their documents with Judy in a county clerk's office and create the file. I don't know why, but the state court clerk's office, our court clerk's office, has changed that by edict last week without discussion. Now we have to file all of our documents with the county court clerk's office first, and then they go to the court clerk's office. It doesn't seem like a big deal, except for, you know, it used to be we didn't do that at all. Now, in any given case, with the discovery things that we do, with motions, with letters, all the things we now have to file over there, it may mean 20 or 30 trips to the clerk's office in any given file. And if you go over to file in the clerk's office, that means one of my people has to stand in line. It has to be reviewed. It has to then be filed. Then we have to take it over to the court clerk's office. It's incredibly time consuming. We are probably going to have to add a person for that. And I'm sure Sean's going to be in the same place relatively soon, because I know that's a reality for his office as well. I don't know why the change has happened. It kind of feels like another unfunded state mandate. They're shifting their work to us. And we have to eat the cost. But we've been doing it ad hoc right now, but sending attorneys over or a paralegal over, we really don't have the capacity for it, and it's taking up a tremendous amount of time. So just letting you know about that. It's something we're going to have to deal with in the very, very near future. Okay. I think there is one more quick thing that deals with expert witness fees that have come to the fore after our most recent trial.
Go ahead.
How do we hire 3 people, and we as a legislative board know nothing about it and see no salary on it or anything else?
If there's money in the budget for salaries and wages, and it's a temporary hire, so time limited. So if there's both money and it's temporary, your rules and our practice has been
Well, I think we at least see the information.
And that's why when speaking with Brooks, we wanted to come here and tell you folks about it.
But it should be in the today. We ought to see how much it's costing us.
They're about $43,000.
I believe that's what
if,
they
if you annualize their salaries. So for 6 months, you know, 60,000 ish. But yeah, and he does have that money in his salary budget.
It's something we shouldn't have to ask for. It should be out there in the information.
Yep, that's why we brought it today. Yep.
Okay. I'm going to just, this again, this is just sort of notice. We're coming up with some issues. We're seeing a lot more expert witnesses in our cases, and that's driving some costs that we weren't expecting. So, and Noel's been the one addressing some of that stuff. So he's going to address it with you right now, just to give you a little information about that.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here just to discuss in regards to the expert witness fees that we're incurring for trials and hearings. As Brooks has discussed over the last few years, these are on the rise. And now that society is more CIS based in regards to how we present evidence, in regards to expert testimony, videos, everything that you see on TV has now worked its way into court. So just recently in Brooks's conviction in regards to a child abuse first case, which was, by the way, takes a ton of work on the backside, just not in the front side of the investigative work from the DA's office perspective. That testimony from, and we don't get to pick who's the expert witness. Sometimes it's just by the fate of where the victim ends up, whether they end up in an ER and it's in Rochester, or they end up in an ER in county or wherever in New York State or out of state. Those are our expert witnesses that we have to bring to trial. This recent bill was just shy of $10,000 for that, and involved a doctor or physical therapist doctor in regards to the child abuse incident. So I have the money in there for, in our budget currently, for to cover the fees. However, that line is totally exhausted now, and we have a pretty full calendar coming up for the summer, as well as the fall, and the winter calendar is now developing. And Brooks has advised me that there's going to be a few more expert witnesses. I'm just bringing it to your attention. We do have some funding that doesn't go to the general fund from diversion that I could move or request to move from you folks to there. So I don't have to play Rob Peter to pay Paul through my general budget for the DA's office. I could move money around, but that really creates a headache for me towards the end of the year, especially. So next month, I would like to propose it as a formal point of discussion to move $10,000 from diversion over to the expert witness line in our 1165 general budget. So
this account has always been sporadic as we budget. We know that depending on what big case you have in the year, that line can be higher and lower. And we know that when we budget each year that this could pop up depending on what cases you have. So yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, if you don't want to use diversion, I say we just fund it out of.
Yeah, I think we actually, if it's $10,000, I think we actually have the ability with Brooks, Mitch, and my approval to allocate those funds because.
Okay.
But yeah. But either way,
but it's, that one it's is a always, good heads it's up. It's always yeah. kind of an unknown depending on what cases you're going to
get. We hope it's low.
Yeah, right. It's, years ago, we funded a big chunk into that number. I decided it didn't make any sense because it kept rolling back. So yeah. that's why we made that change.
Go ahead, Hilda.
Is $10,000 going to be enough?
We can always do it again.
It might be, but again, why overfund it if we don't have to? We can come back a bunch of times and ask for more money as cases come up. I know we have a recent homicide case that's going to require psychiatric witnesses. I know we have another murder case that may require experts coming up in September. So it's going to be a busy year with experts. And in our trial calendar process. So, and I think we had to use an outside lab for a DNA because the state couldn't do it. Whenever we can find a free expert, we do. We use the New York State Police experts for a lot of our lab stuff. Some hospitals will give us free witnesses.
some won't. And that's just where we are. So
I think if you can do it through Jack and Mitch, you know, and do the 10, yeah. You know, we can all, if it comes October and you need 10 more, that's what we got to do.
Right.
Because I'd rather do that than overfund it, yeah. Just like you said.
What are the diversion funds used for?
That's up to you guys. But really, that's we it pays for the program itself, okay. The administration within our office, and that's only what, maybe 5% of what comes in. Yeah. 5 to 7% is the overhead that pays for you know, our people to do it, and the equipment and all those things, the letters, okay. The postage, that kind of stuff. The rest of it comes back to the general fund and is put to various uses. It
also gets allocated to the municipality.
Yeah, we give the towns, the villages, and the cities a certain percentage. And then it comes in, and like, I don't know if it's 6 months or a year ago, we developed like a grant program.
Mm-hmm.
If a city or a town wanted to fill out something, I believe it was a 50%. Like if they wanted cameras, you know, we possibly could match them 5,000. They put up 5,000, but they can request something. We've had a few requests.
Really?
Yeah. It fluctuates. And, like they said, there is the payment or allocation to municipalities. It's pretty formulaic, and it's established in many ways in your local law. The other thing is we have the contract with the vendor that provides the services and manages it. So that comes off the top. But like Brooks said, whatever is remaining, there'll be times, it's happened multiple times, that, you know, his office, sheriff's office, someone has a proposal, and we'll bring it here for utilization of that.
Yeah.
I think the only, in the original, it was for law enforcement purposes or traffic safety purposes. Yeah. And that's what we've used it for.
I have to agree. I mean, it sounds like it's put to good use. So why would we want to take that and transfer it? So, you know, I think we should fund what you need.
Thank you.
And I only suggested that the diversion funds because
you didn't want to ask down. For the other. We
understand. Yeah, I know. Thank you.
Before you go to Sean, I have a question. And Nate's not here, Jack. It's interesting that the vacant senior typist position has a range of about $37,000, but the paralegal only has $23,000.
Yeah,
is that normal that they're that different?
It depends upon the title. That looks the senior typist looks like a real wide range to me. I know in comparison to the paralegal, you have probably a much lower starting number, but the ability to get to a higher.
It seemed just opposite to me. It seems like a paralegal would have much more opportunity for growth.
I honestly think we should check the 75. The 38 looks about right to me. The 75, I don't think we have any senior typist making 75,000 that have even been here for 20 years. So okay. I think that 75 might be an error.
Okay. Scott, we've got a senior typist who's got about 18 years in, and I think she's just about at 50. So I have a hard time thinking anywhere near 75.
The numbers just didn't.
It could be a typo. Yeah. It might be supposed to be 55.
I can actually look it up right now, so I'll do that while you guys are all right. Going on.
Go ahead, Chris.
The next one is for the public defender's office. Two requests. First one is to create a case manager, CSEA grade L. And the second item is to create one part-time investigator in the public defender's office, management grade H, and have Sean here to discuss funding and use.
So rarely do I have these problems, but the Office of Indigent Legal Services came to us to address the Harrell Herring settlement. You've all heard about it over the years now. And this time they came with unsolicited additional funding. And they did so in order to continue to improve the quality of the services that we provide, keep case caps where they need to be, and to ensure that we've got counsel at first appearance at all the appearances. And in so doing, we've got enough funding to create two positions, which ILS has approved for the criminal side of the house. On the family court side of the house, we already have two case managers. It has been an amazing success. And so in order to address our holistic defense model, we'd like to create one more case manager position, this time exclusively on the criminal side. They do not mix because the contracts don't allow it. And one part-time investigator. And my intention for that part-time investigator is not only to address some of the discovery issues that Brooks talked about, but also I want someone, we have an investigator on contract and he's amazing. But I'd like somebody in the office, at least part-time, boots on the ground, doing service, you know, knocking on doors, talking to witnesses, those kinds of things. And ILS agrees that, again, if we can continue to augment our holistic defense model with these types of employees instead of continuing to add additional attorneys, they're very happy to get behind this and to fund it. This funding also came with the ability to increase all of the employees that I have hired under the Horrell-Herring settlement to increase the amount of funding for their salaries by 3% each year for the next 3 years. And my goal there is to work on the recruitment and retention problem that Brooks also brought up. Since we last spoke, I have lost two full-time felony attorneys to other counties. And so we're again struggling, trying to get attorneys here. I've got lots of interest for the part-time positions, obviously, because there's benefits involved. But it's becoming more and more difficult to get full-time in-house counsel to do the things that we need to do. But in any event, that's it in a nutshell. And I'd respectfully request that I be able to create these positions.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second for discussion.
I don't know. It just, I'm glad we're getting free money for this, but that always dries up eventually. And I'm wondering, at what point are we going to have to start footing the bill for all of this ILS sponsored stuff?
It's a question, and we've met with ILS. Sean has to meet with ILS because the sign council is now technically back under our office. We met with the ILS reps on the budget. Again, the state budget has not funded to the level that ILS requested, but fully funded all of the things that they've approved, the prior contracts that keep rolling and everything. I think they certainly have the ability to cut it. But because it is tied to a suit that the state was party to, I think the chances of them actually seeing a reduction is pretty low. I think at some point it'll dry up in the sense that they're not going to be coming to Sean and saying, we have this additional money for you to be able to spend. It's more like, okay, now we're quote unquote, you know, at the level that they want. What they have done is, because some counties have not spent all that has been allocated to them, ILS has, and you might've seen it in some of the NYSAC stuff, ILS was sitting on a surplus that the state came in and swept into the general fund. So I think you'll see more of the behind the scenes, but I think from an actual standpoint, because the state is party to that suit, that a cut where we're now picking up 20% of what we built, I don't think is in the cards yet.
Okay. Because, I mean, when that court case came down, that was our biggest fear, was,
yeah,
what's this going to cost us?
Yeah. No, I think ILS certainly, as kind of an independent agency, you know, does their advocacy for more funding. I think what you'll see is more like what the state did this year is, okay, we're going to fund everything that they've awarded to everyone, but they're not going to do anything extra.
Mr. Sackhammer?
Jack, I'm concerned about this 3%. Don't they come under our grid?
They come under our grid. So what it would essentially do is just decrease by 3% our cost.
Decrease our cost.
That's where, not that I anticipate anything drying up per se, but where I do see the problem is because these, in particular, the Horrell-Herring contract, because it's a settlement and not a distribution, we can't ask for amendments. And we do these in three-year chunks. And so what was troubling me was, yes, we would get the money up front, we'd set these things up, but as we do our salary increases and raises at the county level, it's not, the funding isn't catching up with that.
Right.
This is the first opportunity where I've been able to say, let's take a chunk of that, put it back into what we already have, because this was an amendment they offered. And defer the cost of when we do the salary increases and other things.
Yeah. So,
it's trying to keep up with where we're at. And, you know, even if you wanted, I could get an ILS rep here to talk more about, you know, the future and what they think about these funds. They've codified ILS's role into the executive law. And so I don't see their presence or their funding going anywhere anytime soon. I think there would be riots in the streets if they cut this kind of funding, because it was designed to improve a public defense system that was in sorely in need of some correction.
Yeah, I think you'll just see it flatten out. And like Sean said, we're averaging 6%, you know, increase in salary. So to Gary's point, it just offsets our costs a little bit.
The two attorneys that you lost are the counties. Was that, I mean, have we lost any because of the new assigned counsel rate that came out from the state?
I think we've lost a few, but you know, after that went into effect, I think we lost who we lost to that. And then it's plateaued. It's about the same. These two, it was just burnout, and they wanted to change in what they did.
Okay. Thank you.
We already have a motion and a second for discussion. Is there any other discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
And if I could quick, Scott has the eagle eye. The 5 and the 7 were transposed, so it's 57.
Okay.
Thank you.
Final request today through the personnel office is, after discussion from the last couple of months at this committee, is to request to create 2 sheriff deputies through the association grade 11. Obviously, this has been discussed at length through staffing analysis and all that. So any questions? The sheriff is here.
So I told everybody that this was going to be up for discussion this month at the meeting after we've had a couple months of discussion about it. And then also, so the sheriff had gave us a good presentation about adding the 2 every 6 months. I know we can't do that. We can't afford that right now. We'll look at more detail. Jack and Chris are putting together with the sheriff's department response times, call logs, you know, amount of cases and stuff like that. So at budget time, we'll look at what we can do moving forward. This is just something that we had talked about doing before we had to wait, you know, 6 months to make this happen. Just giving everybody a little feedback. I didn't want anybody to think that, you know, this was guaranteeing it to be 2 every 6 months or anything like that. It's just so that we can help some of that deputies being out there 1 at a time or 2 at a time. We might be able to help it a little bit with this. So that's where I was coming from with this. So,
and anything to add to it?
Yeah, no, I think that covers it. Yes. You know, we're getting a lot of data. We'll meet with the sheriff's office, you know, as budget time approaches, to synthesize the data you know, evaluate as we go forward. But as you mentioned, I mean, the feedback that I heard was, especially like you just said, you know, the situations where there's one or two, if we can help plug those holes and these two do that, we'll obviously be able to keep track of response times and those sort of things as the months roll on closer to budget.
And I did talk to the sheriff about this, and we did accept the grant for the 2 new vehicles a couple months ago. So there are vehicles for these 2 at the time. So there again, if we're looking at any more, we'd look at vehicles at budget time. But right now we don't have to look at vehicles on top of this, because they do have those 2 coming. And you have anything else to add to that, Sheriff, or did I say that okay?
Did wonderfully.
All right. Does
total expected cost annualized?
Annualized without the vehicle, you're probably with the 2, 150-ish. Okay.
Plus benefits.
Depending upon what salary. Right. With fringe, I think it's probably closer to the 170 with fringe. Yeah. So if you, yeah, so call it 150, 160 at 50% fringe. And we obviously have more vacancies across the board. We're making headway, as we reported to you all, but certainly have enough in salaries and wages to cover this?
I think it's a great start for us, and you know, we're dealing with safety issues in the county here. So we'd agree that, you know, we're definitely going to, as Jack said, fill the gaps here, fill the holes, and this is a good start for us. So I'm glad we're creating those positions now, these two positions now, and then, like you said, Jeff, we'll you know, further discuss it for next year. And
so is that a motion?
Pardon?
Is that a motion?
That's a motion. There we go.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Right, we have a motion and a second. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries. And the sheriff did tell me that they're, you know, our candidates that they have for these positions, you know, they have interest in coming to the county. So I think it's something that we can fill. So go ahead, Hilda. Vehicles come. They're not here yet, but I think, Sheriff, didn't you say there was a couple spares? They were like one, the two that we ordered were actually, if I understand it correct, the sheriff can say, but the two that we have from the grant, we're going to replace ones. Mm. So we actually have some until they come.
Yeah, and with the lease, program, I think we're seeing some benefits of being able to roll over, get newer vehicles and keep ones. So I think the fleet's doing about as good as it's been.
As good as it's ever been, yeah. Yep, the lease program's working well. We're averaging 5 a year, typically, that are replacing, which keeps us on our 5-year. Each vehicle lasts between 3 and 5 years. Working out well and keeping them in more reliable vehicles.
Well, that only adds to the 1-2 a.m. call. We want them people not only to have some backup, but to have a car that's going to get them back to cell service at least.
Correct. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have anything, Jay? Anything for executive session? Is there anything? Go ahead, Fred.
Where we stand on the closing of the sticker stores, because I know there's at least one in my district that's still operational.
Yeah, we're having a meeting with the city of Corning on one. I don't know if Tim wants to speak to some of the action that that Curtis and the county attorney's office is taking.
Not easy, even in the city of Corning. So Curtis has spent a lot of time on it. But if we're aware of another one, let's talk about it and see if Mr. Baker's office and myself and whatever weights and measures can do to make it go away, we'll see what we can do.
What I would say is we have been in our discussions with the city of Corning and the sheriff's office, DA's office, Tim's office, Langdon weights and measures. We're looking at it as like almost, you know, four legs of a stool, looking at it from the law enforcement, the civil with weights and measures, I guess it's three, and possibly codes enforcement if applicable, to try to figure out a way to shut them down.
Go ahead, Kelly.
I just wanted to say a couple things in regard to that. We did have a stakeholder meeting for the Corning store and had developed a game plan. The county attorney's office is working on their game plan, so our meeting on Monday is follow-up to that. But certainly, please let us know what the address is of that place, and then maybe we can develop some game plan for that as well. I don't know if it would be appropriate to pull them into the same time frame at this short notice, but...
I would suggest a separate conversation, because they're in the rural town. I think their circumstances are going to be a little bit different in terms of what resources and options. I don't even know if they have zoning, and, you know, obviously they have code enforcement, but
might be more like the showdown at the OK Corral.
Yeah.
The state was in Elmira this week. I know they raided two ones in Elmira.
Let them down.
Yep.
So their law is different though.
Yeah. But I just meant, so the state is at least in our area.
Should we be looking at their law and our law and comparing it? I know that we had lengthy debate on how the law should be established, but if theirs is working more efficiently and they're not getting into any form of, I mean, are they getting in trouble because we were advised that our law is proper in accordance with what the state allows, but if theirs is different and it's more effective, should we be looking at that?
I think we need to talk to them, because as Jeff said, it was the state that came down, so they wouldn't be
like the Moses, they'd be operating under OCM. So I don't think that I'd have to look.
But I thought when Hilda sent us that law from Elmira, it still referenced the city codes.
It's a partnership between codes and law enforcement. Yeah, just like we're trying to do here.
So Jack, you said OCM basically shut those two down.
Well, that's
is that what we're hearing?
I don't know. Sure, ahead, sure. Yes.
If I could just clear it up, I spoke with Chief Thorne after they did that to find out exactly what they did. They did it in partnership. So OCM, they came in, the city bought and undercover buys at each place. They did a search warrant. They went in, they recovered almost $2 million worth of product and equipment. They tagged it under codes with their city ordinance. OCM tagged it under theirs, and OCM took all of the leaf material and they kept all of the rest as evidence, and they're prosecuting them criminally, and they're also doing the civil end through codes and OCM. So they did everything in one bucket,
which is what right. That's the discussions. Yes.
So basically, Sheriff, they shut it down. They sealed it. That's
it's everything out.
And if they should open it up again, obviously another criminal charge.
Correct.
And civil penalties, which is the point that we're at with the law department trying to enforce OCM's action previously against the Market Street location. So it's similar approach.
And our connection with OCM, our every time we've requested help or spoke to them, they move like in slow motion. So I'm curious on the time frame from the time OCM got contacted to the time frame that they shut it down. I mean, was it a long time? Was it a week?
I can ask Chief Thorne that, but okay. He seemed to speak to me that it was time-wise to when the undercover buy occurs. So it was in close proximity. But again, they utilized everybody they had.
Okay. And I understand that we do still have one in Corning, 31 East Market Street. And, we're getting complaints. Is it okay for me to say that address?
Yeah, that's the one that we're meeting on, and there's good. Active.
And I think that's the right now, the only one that I'm hearing about. Well, so
I don't know about that. But.
Yeah. All good. Right. If there's nothing else, do we have a motion to adjourn? Oh, go ahead, Tilda.
I'd like to be invited to that meeting, please, for Monday.
I'll send you the invite.
Thank you.
I do? Yeah. Thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries.